Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Infinite Potential podcast. And we are starting season 3 today with episode 51. And I am over the moon, super humble, and super, 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 super excited to have Mr. Brian Keane in the house today. Brian, how are you?
I'm fantastic, Beth. I can't wait to chat. I'm looking forward to kicking off season 3.
I'm over the moon to have obviously to have got yourself on to secure season 3 and to start it off. We'll go through kind of obviously a bit more about you. I don't want to spoil too much. I want to let you kind of let everyone know a little bit about who you are, what you're about, and I'm sure straight away they'll kind of twig exactly why I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. So, Brian, let everyone know a little bit about you for me, please.
Yeah, so I'll try and keep it kind of short and sweet because there's a multitude of directions we could potentially go off in when it comes to talking about the backstory. But I suppose my elevator pitch on my background is I was a primary school teacher. I worked in London for 4 years as a primary school teacher, and then in 2014 moved back to Ireland and set up a one-to-one personal training business. And over the space of 2014? So the last several years, I've moved online, wrote a couple of books that were bestsellers, went from the world of bodybuilding and fitness modeling to ultra endurance events. So I did Marathon de Saab, which is 6 back-to-back marathons through the Sahara Desert. I ran through the Arctic Circle line in 2019, tore my Achilles 86 kilometers from the end on that, but got to the end. And right now I am sitting at the top of a mountain, effectively recording this podcast with you, Beth, because I've lost my phone coverage and my internet coverage at my house.
Wow. I mean, just for context, obviously, if we let all of the podcast kind of listeners know exactly where you're recording from, whereabouts do you live? Whereabouts are you today?
So I'm in the west of Ireland. So when I moved back to Ireland in 2014, I moved to the west of Ireland, back where I grew up in Galway. And now when I came back from the Sahara in 2018, I moved close to where I grew up. So I'm about a good stone's throw. I won't say a stone's throw away from where I grew up, but it's pretty close. Like if you had a really good baseball throw, you'd probably hit the house I grew up in. And as of now, I'm out in the sticks, which has been amazing during the last year and a half or so with the pandemic, because if you turn off the TV or you turn off your phone, you wouldn't know there was any pandemic going on because, you know, your closest neighbors, you know, a 10-minute walk away from really outside of my parents' house. But as of now, I'm recording overlooking a lake at the top of a mountain, which is beautiful. Just it's not an ideal scenario for recording a podcast. I'm sitting in my car, we're getting it done anyway.
We'll get it done, and modern technology will certainly help us out with it for sure. And your kind of elevator pitch now, for context, I've followed you for years, and happen to have 2 of your best-selling books sat right next to me on my bookshelf. So I obviously know a lot about you, a lot about your background, but when I was thinking about what to talk about today, and one of the things that jumps out for me, because we could go through loads of fitness stuff, we could go through nutrition, there's all sorts of things we can, like this kind of podcast could go in any one direction just because you're so knowledgeable on so many topics. But for me, one of the things that I was thinking about was from primary school teacher to ultra endurance event athlete and best-selling author, like how, why, and like when does that happen? Like why such a change? Because you speak a lot about transformations and mental resilience, mental robustness, and things like that. And I think that for me is a topic I really want to dive straight into. So, for yourself, when you were teaching, when you look back to kind of Brian now, what would you say had to change for you to have the last kind of 7-8 years that you've had?
To be honest, there's only one major change, and it kind of, we could kind of spider network it into 100 different things, but I started doing more things for myself versus doing things that I was told I should do, or basing too many decisions based on the expectations of others. And when I worked as a primary school teacher, now I was in that kind of funny middle ground when I was a primary school teacher, because a lot of people think that when I left it and set up a personal training business and then moved online and, you know, went down the role of, you know, qualified personal trainer, nutritionist, strength and conditioning coach, all the kind of areas that I went into, people kind of assumed that I hated my day job, and I didn't. Like, just to clarify, my first ever teaching job, I hated it. Like, I remember thinking the first day I went in, I was about 15 minutes into the first day after years of getting degrees and qualifications and the first job. And I'm like, oh my God, this isn't what I want to do. I was like, what have I done? And as I went on with that, I stayed in it for another 3.5-4 years, and I started to like it into this, the point where it was okay. It was a solid 5 out of 10. I didn't love it, but I also didn't hate it. And sometimes when I talk to people, they assume that I hated teaching and that's why I left, and that just isn't true. I hated my first job, and but for me, teaching was a job. It was something that I knew every Friday I was off for the weekend, and I knew every Monday I was going into work. Whereas what I do now, and since 2014, even 2012, when I qualified as a personal trainer first and started working as a trainer in the evening. So for 2 years, I worked as a teacher during the day and I worked as a personal trainer at nighttime. And I remember thinking I would do this for free. I was like, I would work as a personal trainer, I would work in a gym, I would work in fitness for free. I was like, I can't believe I get paid for this. And then in 2014, when I made the jump, I kind of had to let go a lot of my ego. I had to let go a lot of the opinions of others, because like, you're going from what, in Ireland anyway, even though I came from the UK system, of what's perceived as a decent job, you know, somewhat respected, decent pay, good holidays, and to basically going back to zero. And you know, the analogy I use, you know this best from the books, is the ladder against the right wall. I'm like, you're better to be at the bottom against the right wall with your ladder than to be halfway up the ladder against the wrong wall. And when I moved back to try and get a fitness business off the ground, that's how I felt. I was like, I know I'm at the bottom of this ladder. I had to move back in at my mum and dad. My sister gave me her crappy little Toyota Yaris that was nearly as old as I was, that, you know, one of those cars that didn't necessarily start every morning. Like, it got me to work 75% of the time, but I spent 25% of the time on roads thumbing or trying to get lifts for people to, you know, make a one-to-one personal training appointment. But it was what I wanted to do, and I stopped making decisions on what everybody said I should do. I stopped making decisions on what everybody else thought I should do, and I started to kind of listen to the internal voice a little bit better. And over the last few years, I've just got consistently more tuned in to that voice. So when I was down the world of fitness modeling and bodybuilding, so I did, you know, decently well in those world, in that world, you know, I was traveling around the world doing photo shoots. I, you know, finished, you know, I finished eighth in the world's fitness model championship in 2015. Like, I did okay in that world, but as soon as the voice would change to, you need to go to something else. So when the world of endurance came up, it was like I was trying to figure out, well, what's next. I'd got what I wanted from the world of bodybuilding. I'd got what I wanted from the world of fitness modeling, and there was something missing. And then obviously in 2014, for those who are familiar with my story, so my daughter was born, and obviously all my priorities shifted. So the world of fitness modeling and bodybuilding didn't appeal to me as much anymore. So I was kind of spent 2016, 2017, kind of just trying to be a dad and, you know, writing the first book and just trying to have a little bit more of an impact on the world, either through her or through what I was doing online. And then in 2018, I did Marathon de Saab, which is the 6 back-to-back marathons through the Sahara Desert that's self-sufficient. And I realized that in the lead up to that, I don't think I was mentally strong enough to be able to get through it, because I didn't know if it was something I was going to be able to do. Like, I had no running background. Like, I played sport all my life. I played GA, I played soccer, and then I went into the world of bodybuilding. So I was as far from a marathon runner or an ultra marathon runner as you could get. And when I completed that in 2018, and it was, you know, at the time, the hardest thing I'd ever done in my life up to that point, but I felt this massive wave of relief mixed with, where else have I been giving myself limitations? And it's just progressed from there. I started to listen to that voice when I heard about the Arctic. Then I'm like, oh, well, I've done the heat. I was like, I wouldn't mind going to the Arctic. I was like, let's see how this would go. And I've just continually done that over the years. And the advice I generally offer people is, like, get clear on what you want to do and then just kind of wholeheartedly go towards that. Like, it sounds cliche and it sounds obvious, but it's so easy as someone that made so many decisions in my earlier part of my life, definitely in my first 25 years, of doing everything that I thought would either improve my status or, you know, make me more attractive to people, or, you know, would make me feel like I was doing something in the eyes of my family or my parents or loved ones or friends or whatever. Once I kind of got rid of all that, it was a lot easier to make decisions. And then it's just been a rinse and repeat since, and listen to that voice and then follow in that direction based on what it's saying.
What would you say to somebody who listens to all of that and then sits there and thinks that they almost can't hear their own voice through all the noise at the moment, like they don't know where to turn? Perhaps they are similar to, say, where you were with teaching, like that 5 out of 10, middle of the road, living, know that their ladder isn't up on the right wall, but kind of don't really know how to find a different wall, or scared of starting again and things like that. What would you say to somebody to try and help them work through finding a bit of their own voice?
Well, I'd say the analogy I would use, it's similar to somebody that's overweight trying to get in shape. I'm like, the first thing you need to do is probably minimize or clear out your cupboards of all the crap food you eat. I'm like, you know, start with, what are you consuming mentally in your life that's making you feel like there's too much noise out there? So, you know, as of now, it's, you know, things like social media, it's, you know, being bogged down in that world. It can be being around too many negative people or family and friends who are just constantly worrying about things that are what could potentially be perceived from the outside world as unimportant, you know, trivial stuff, and, you know, majoring in minor things. Like, if you find that you're that person that can't listen to that voice or has never even heard that voice because there's too much noise, well, the first thing you need to do is, what do you need to remove that's going to help get that signal clearer? And then after that, it's just about, you know, listening to it and getting out of your own way, you know, rewire your mindset. My second book is all about that. It's about, you know, your own inner enemy being between your two ears, and everything that you do and the decisions you make, and seeing failure as a negative thing, and self-sabotaging, all these things that hold people back. It's working through that and realize that if you have to get your mindset right, you have to go from 0 to 1 before you can get from 1 to 10. And if that means reducing the amount of noise so that that message becomes clearer, either through following less people on social media or being very particular and specific and have a purpose for who you're following on social media, or spending less time on your phone or your device, spending more time with people who lift you up, who challenge you, who want the best for you, all of these things add up. And not overthinking and just worrying about, you know, well, I don't know what I want to do. I'm like, well, nobody knows what they want to do with the start. It's the, you know, when you take the first step, everything else becomes clearer. Like, again, I remember when I was 25, 26, I didn't know what I wanted to do. But a good question is, what don't you want to do? Like, you don't necessarily have to know what makes you happy. You don't necessarily have to know what you want to do. And you don't necessarily have to know what's going to make you fulfilled. But what you can ask is, what don't you like doing? What doesn't make you happy? What doesn't make you feel fulfilled? And then you do less of that and then take it from there.
And it's okay. I think so many people are scared of change, and it's okay for those things to change. It's okay. And that's something that I picked up massively from your book as well. It's okay, you know, this kind of journey of self-development and kind of failing forwards and learning something from something. So then actually, inherently, it's not a failure. I think we're in today's society, and you'll agree, social media probably has enhanced that somewhat in terms of everyone's fear of being deemed, quote unquote, a failure in something. Like perhaps that perceived failure that you may have thought of when, you know, people are saying, well, why is Brian's teaching job to go in personal training? It doesn't make sense. And to some, it's that element of fear that you do speak about a lot in your book. And I think that there's a lot that people can take away from kind of stepping into fear a little bit, wouldn't you say?
100%. Like, I think you've said two really good things there, Beth. Like, you know, a philosophy and brain tattoo I have is, you know, you feel the fear and do it anyways. Like, another misconception that a lot of people will have, and I definitely had this in my earlier life, was thinking that as you go up the ladder, the fear goes away. It doesn't go away. You still have the exact same fears. They're just channeling different directions, but you get better at dealing with it. That's the only difference. Like, things that terrified me once upon a time, public speaking terrified me, you know, leaving a safe, secure job terrified me, my daughter being born terrified me, all those things that were once fears, once you got a handle on them and you get better at managing them, you use that as what I call, it's an anchoring of fear. You're using a past experience and other times in your life when you were terrified to deal with the potential fears that come in the future, because that's what happens. It never goes away. You just get better at handling it. And then if you can merge that with what you mentioned there about failure, like, I think if I could go back, Beth, and give a magic wand to a younger self, it would have been to completely rewire the way I see failure, because I thought failure was an end result. Also, failure was something that I was afraid of, not realizing that failure is a brilliant thing. As long as you're not making the same mistake over and over again and you're learning from it, failing forward is the key to success in any area that you do, whether that's your diet, whether that's relationships, whether that's your parenting, whether that's your fitness, whether that's your business. You're failing forward. Like, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody makes fuck ups. Everybody has failures. The only difference between those people who tend to get ahead and those who don't are those who are able to learn from it. Like, there's nuggets of gold in every single failure that you have. Every diet that you've done is feedback on what not to do next time. Every failed relationship is feedback on that you need to have a different filtering process, or you can spot the red flags easier. Every failure in your business leads you forward. As long as you don't do something that's critical, that's a killer blow, all those micro failures are feedback. And if I could go back and talk to my younger self, I would say, embrace the failure. Like, you know, don't do something stupid. Don't jump off a fucking building. Like, don't do something that's going to kill you, either physically, literally, or, you know, metaphorically. But fail, you know, and learn from it each time and move forward. I think if you can get a handle on those two things, as somebody that struggled with fear and would constantly disguise fear as practicality and make decisions based out of, you know, I shouldn't leave. For me, my fear disguised as practicality was my teaching job. I'm like, oh, I shouldn't leave a safe and secure job. And that was the thing I lived in, not realizing that I was just afraid to start my own thing. And I would constantly live in that story and never question that story. But if you can get a handle on your fear and you get a handle on that kind of self-talk and you can rewire the way that you're seeing failure, like, you could literally go after anything and it's inevitable that you're going to be successful in that thing that you do because your mindset is right from the get-go.
Definitely, definitely. And what would you say, so you touched on kind of a few minutes ago, kind of going from, you know, professional fitness model to marathon to Sahara, you know, six back-to-back marathons through the Sahara Desert, no less. So, you know, scorching heat, self-sufficient as well. What, in terms of, obviously, that's a huge leap, that's into the unknown. How did you deal with fear then? Like, what were your kind of breakdown strategies going into that in terms of your training? How practical were you being with things there? What were you trying to control, improve, and have just any kind of positive impact on the potential outcome at the end?
Well, I'm a big believer in controlling the controllables and not worrying about the things that are outside of your control. Now, again, that's something that can sound very cliched on the front end. It's kind of an old stoic philosophy and, you know, don't worry about what you can't control. But it's true. And for when it came to Marathon des Sables, that's what I did. And my thought process in the lead up to that was, I'd never ran a marathon. I wasn't a runner, as I said. I don't think I'd ever really ran more than 10K. And then to run potentially six back-to-back marathons through the Sahara, so not even on the road, like through a terrain that I was unfamiliar with, as someone that, you know, lives in the west of Ireland, I had to kind of break that down to, well, I need to be able to run a marathon. I'm like, there's no point worrying about six if I can't run a single marathon. So all I did was I built up the goal to run a marathon. So I started training in August 2017 and I ran Marathon des Sables in April 2018. And I remember, Beth, the first run I did a 2 kilometer run at the end of my workout. I did my normal push workout in the gym and then jumped on the treadmill for 2 kilometers. I hadn't been on a treadmill in, I'd say, 15 years. Like, I didn't use the treadmill. Like, when I was bodybuilding, I used the cross trainer or I used the bike and I hopped on the treadmill. So I set the pace at, I think, 15 kilometers an hour or whatever it was. I didn't know if that was fast. I didn't know if that was slow. I was like, oh yeah, I'll just set it at that. I nearly got sick. I remember the 2 kilometers and I came off and I was just sitting in the dressing room at the end of the workout going, oh my God, what the fuck am I going to do? I'm supposed to run what would have been, you know, another 248 kilometers if you added the six marathons together. I was like, how am I going to do this? So I had a bit of a deflation week. And then after that, I remember thinking, right, I need to focus on a marathon. I'm like, I've never ran a marathon. I need to do this first and foremost. So I set the goal. I ran the Dubai Marathon in January, which was 4 months before Marathon des Sables. And then I kind of worked towards that. Like, the fear for me, when it came to Marathon des Sables, it actually, I'll share what I did, but on reflection, it wasn't as helpful as it was when I was going to the Arctic a year later. And when the fear came up for the Sahara, I journaled it all. Like, I put it all, it's actually in the book, it's in Rewire Your Mindset. I journaled how I was feeling. I just wrote everything down and I just kind of brain dumped it all onto what was the notes in my phone at the time, and just trying to get it out of my head. I was like, because if somebody gave me, you know, an out 4 days before I was to fly to the Sahara, I would have jumped with both hands. I was like looking for any out that could be given, but I'm like, fuck, I've told my family, I've told my friends, I've put it on social media, I've trained. I was like, I'm going to have to go and do this. But I did know that if I got through it, there was going to be a time in the future when I found myself feeling similarly scared, and I'd be able to use this as a reference point. You know, I use it as a, what I call in the book, the fear anchor, where you're using a point in your past when you were terrified, and you're using that to go after a goal that you're potentially setting in the future. So a year later, when I ran the Arctic, and I was getting a little bit worried in the lead up to it, just because it was so different, and obviously the Arctic is such a, you know, an unforgiving terrain in terms of the ice and the snow and the cold. But I remembered how I felt when I was doing Marathon des Sables. And I'm like, oh, you felt this way before and you got through that, you know, and you came out way better for it. And you're using that. And I use that as a point going forward for the Arctic. But that's what I did. So in terms of the lead up, I did everything I could within my control, which was my training. I could control my training. I could control the food I was eating. I could control my mindset to a degree. You know, I couldn't control if there was going to be a sandstorm. I couldn't control if there was going to be a problem with, you know, the temperature being exceptionally hot or anything along those lines. So I didn't worry about those things. I was like, if they come, I'll deal with them when they come. But my mindset had to be, well, what can I control? So I focused on that. And then all the bad stuff that came, the first day I got sand in one of my eyes, so I was blinded in my left eye until day 2.5 before I was able to see in that eye again. Got a sandstorm on the, you know, day 4 or day 3 in between that period. So things like that I couldn't control. It was just a case of deal with them then and not worry about them, because like you could mind fuck yourself before you've even stepped foot out the door, like with everything, like where you're worrying about whatever goal you've set for yourself. And you know, I'm using the Sahara as my example, but this is somebody else's weight loss, or this is somebody else's 5K, or this is somebody else's relationship, or this is somebody else's first date, like where they're terrified and they've completely mind fucked themselves before they've even started. I'm like, anybody could do that. So it's a case of take what's in your control, manage and control that, and then everything else, let go of it, and then deal with it if problems occur as you go along.
I guess that's, I'm not a parent myself, but I can only kind of relate that as well to parenting, in terms of that fear of obviously, you know, your children going out into the world and things like that, and how debilitating it would be for people if they kind of swallowed up that fear and sat in that fear, whether it is dieting, parenting, relationships, or taking on kind of different kind of extreme events and things like that. And then it's I found it interesting with your podcasts on them at the time when your Achilles went in the Arctic Circle, because obviously you can't physically control that split second in time, but very quickly you have to be able to control how you therefore react, because you're in a situation whereby you're going to get very cold very quickly if you stop moving, and you kind of can't stop moving. And that can be relatable, as you said, to all sorts of people. You know, your Achilles in the, kind of tearing in the Arctic Circle, somebody else's anxiety over starting a new job or leaving their job or changing their relationship status, whatever it may be. And what did go through your mind at the time out there in the cold, feeling that Achilles and thinking, oh shit, what do I do now? Was there kind of a 5 second, was it like a minute? Kind of, what happened out there? If you could set the scene, because I've been fascinated by that ever since kind of hearing the stories.
Yeah, so to give a little bit of a background on the Arctic, so it's a race 230 kilometers to the Arctic Circle line over 5 days, and the Arctic's conditions are as exactly as you would expect. It got down to as cold as minus 38 degrees at one point. It was freezing. And even though it's not too bad during the day, it gets dark in the Arctic around 4 o'clock, and then the temperature just absolutely plummets. And it was absolutely, it's exactly as you would picture. And what happened to me when my Achilles tore, and it was torn 86 kilometers from the end. And now it had been bothering me in the lead up. And the way that is set up, that race was set up, is there's different tents and there's medical professionals in the tents. So I did feel safe, as safe as you could at all times. But when I went into one of the medics, she said, and looked at my Achilles and was like, "You've torn your Achilles." She was like, "If you keep going, this could rupture." And I remember thinking, fuck, I was like, if my Achilles ruptures in the Arctic, I was like, this could be a whole host of potential problems. But with that being in mind, I nearly regretted going to ask her because I then had to make a decision. And when I thought about it, I remember thinking, well, this is painful now, but pain is temporary. I'm like, at some point, this isn't going to hurt. At some point, I'm going to be finished with this. At some point, I'm going to be at home in my house, fully fed, warm fire on, and things are going to be okay. I'm like, so I have a decision to make now. I'm like, do I tap out and do I, get flown out and not finish what I set out to do in terms of hitting the Arctic Circle line and finishing the run? Or do I power through and realize that, yeah, it's probably going to be 3, 6, 9, 12 months of rehab, but in a year's time, it's probably going to be fine and I'm probably going to be okay. And that was my decision. Like, and I think there's an old quote, and I think it's by Winston Churchill, and I always remember it when I'm doing these races, and that's the, if you're going through hell, keep going. And that's what I was thinking in the Arctic. I remember thinking this pain is temporary. It will eventually go away, and I just need to power on through. And I would have had the regret. Like, at some point, I would have been sitting at home. I talk in the book, Beth, a few months before the Arctic, and this was probably the thing that got me through. I ran an ultramarathon. No, I didn't. I signed up to run an ultramarathon in Barcelona the November before the Arctic. Yeah, you know the one I'm going to talk about. It was 3 months before, and I was on a definitely being ran way too much by my ego at that point, because I'd done Marathon des Sables in 2018. I thought I was untouchable. I was like, fucking hell. I was like, I'm not a runner, and I got through this crazy challenge. I was like, cool, I'll sign up to a training run in Barcelona. It's a 76-kilometer ultra marathon. I was like, I'll go out and I'll do that before the Arctic. It'll be great. Thinking that, I don't really need to train for that. I'm like, I ran the Sahara, I'll be fine. And I landed out there. About 40 kilometers into it, I got lost and went on the wrong path and went to the wrong checkpoint. And they said, look, you're going to have to double back 10 kilometers and you might not make the cutoff time for the race. You could run back an extra 10K, and when you get back there, they're going, for anyone unfamiliar with ultramarathons, they're run by checkpoints. So, this one was, I think it was 76 kilometers or 86 kilometers, whatever it was, and every 10K there was a checkpoint, but I went in the wrong direction. So they said, you're going to have to double back to the last one and then go the right way, and you could time out. So I was like, no, fuck this. I'm like, I'm out. I'm like, it's wet. It was Barcelona, and it was the most rain they had in Barcelona on record that previous week and a half. So I was wet. It was horrible conditions. I was like, no, I'm out of this. I'm like, this race is shit. I'm not enjoying this. I thought it was going to be on the road, and they have me running up Mount Tibidabo. I'm like, I didn't look into anything with the race. I'm like, oh, run in Barcelona, race in Barcelona. I'll do that. That looks good. And I came home. I went back to the hotel. I jumped in the shower, I got some food, and I was lying on bed, and I had my mum and my daughter with me at the time. And I remember thinking, fuck it. I'm like, why? I was like, you could have finished that. I'm like, you totally could. I was like, you completely tapped out there. Like, there was no reason that you couldn't double back yet. You'd have turned a 76K race into an 86K race. But, your mindset was all over the shop here. And at that point, I thought, if I go to the Arctic with this mindset, I'm going to die. I was like, I was like, there's a legitimate chance, because of all the things that can go wrong, if your head isn't right, you could die in the Arctic. And that kind of put a little bit of a fear of God into me to get my head right and get my mindset right. And that stood to me when my Achilles tore, because my Achilles tore. And I remember thinking how I felt in Barcelona when it wasn't even the race I had been training for a year. It was just a training run. It was a race for me to prepare for the Arctic. And I remember how crap I felt. And I was like, if I do this with the Arctic, I'm going to feel 100 times worse. I'm like, I've trained for nearly a year for this. I'm like, I'm not coming back. I was like, I'm not going to come back to the Arctic to do it again. So it's either now or never. And that's what pushed me through. So, like, one of the things I talk about, and you know this, Beth, is you, like, know why you're doing something. Like, if you're in, be all in and be committed to it. Otherwise, don't bother. Like, if you don't want to do something, if you don't want to lose weight, if you don't want to race, if you don't want to be in a relationship, if you don't want to start your own business, if you don't want to go for a job, that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you do, then you should play all out and go all in. And if it gets difficult, realize that that pain is temporary. And that's what happens. Like, all pain, for the most part, is temporary. The pain of change initially, the physical pain of tearing your Achilles, the pain of not getting to eat the food you want because you want to lose the weight or dieting or whatever it is. Like, that pain is temporary and will eventually go away. But your why and the goal that you've set for yourself needs to be bigger than that. And once it is, that can drive you forward.
Yeah, I think understanding and clarifying kind of your why, and it is so important. But it's also, there's understanding whether it's internal, external, give it, and allowing those external ones potentially, I sometimes refer to them as like little mini checkpoints, whether it might be a certain clothing or like a medal for something like that. That's kind of like a nice checkpoint to get to. That's something bright and shiny to look at, or that's a front of you that can just kind of top up, let's say, motivation levels and things like that, because motivation peaks and troughs just like the sea comes in and out. But that, having that deeper internal, really intrinsic motivator, I'm intrigued as to kind of what yours might be at the moment in terms of why you're doing what you're currently doing, but also your viewpoint on how important the difference between the two is.
Well, they change. So when it comes to things like motivation, and you've echoed exactly my thoughts on that, Beth, that you can't rely on motivation. Like, it ebbs and flows, and it's your habits and what you do every day that determine how well you do. Like, you don't do things on the day that you're motivated. Like, one of my mentors used to always tell me that successful people do what they have to do, whether they feel like it or not. And I think that's the secret. Like, for weight loss, for endurance events, for business, for relationships, for whatever it is, like, you do the things you have to do regardless of how you feel, because that's what determines how far ahead you get. Motivation, it's great on the days you feel motivated. Like, I love training and eating and doing things on the days I feel motivated, but they're not the days that determine the results. It's how you, what you did on those other days, the days when you didn't want to get up at 5 a.m. or the days you didn't want to train or the days you didn't want to eat, a salad for lunch and you wanted to have, a KFC instead. Like, it depends on what you've done on those days. So I think knowing that motivation comes and goes, and that that's not going to be a determinant of your overall success long term, is important for people. And then pairing that with a little bit of self-reflection on what drives you. And I've been kind of thinking about this recently, because you get different things from these events. And for me, when I did the Marathon de Saab, the thing that I got was setting bigger challenges for myself and doing something that was so far outside my comfort zone that allowed me to question all the other limitations that I was holding in my life. And that was what I got from that. From the Arctic, it was completely different. I didn't get that from the Arctic. But what I did get from the Arctic was a completely rewired relationship with pain. Like, I came back from the Arctic, and even to this day, and that was, 2019, I came back and realized that I think I could handle anything that gets thrown at me in terms of pain. Emotional pain, physical pain, because they feel very fucking similar. Like, I feel like I can handle that better now. I feel like I have a stronger tree in a storm, where before, little things used to worry me, like things about my daughter, things about my mom, things about the people closest to me. I would always be afraid of potentially bad things that could happen to them. Jordan Peterson has a really good quote that you should try and be the strongest person at your parents' funeral. And I think that the Arctic gave me that. It gave me enough confidence in myself that if something really fucking bad happens, I can be the oak in the storm for the people around me and for the loved ones around me. And you're just seeking out these things that can potentially move your life forward in a positive way. And sometimes you get it from endurance events, sometimes you get it from fitness events, sometimes you get it from, going from not being able to run to being able to run a 5K, it's relative, or not being able to squat any weights on the bar to being able to put 5 kilos each side. So it's all relative, but different things give you different responses based on where your life is. And as of now, I've got different priorities, so those crazy challenges that were once really serving for me aren't necessarily a serving for me anymore, and they don't drive me as much as they once did. So it's just listening to that voice on what's important to me now. So like my priorities now are things like my daughter, my partner, my family, making sure that I've got time with those people and that it's quality time and that I'm present. Like they're things that are of such a high value to me because I've done a lot of the internal work on myself through some of the physical exertions and challenges. And then if something else comes up down the line, I'll jump into that. But I think for people that want to work on it, it's just a case of, well, what do you need to do? Like, where are you struggling? Is it confidence? Okay, you set yourself a goal and you go after that. That's what I did with my first fitness model competition. That's what that gave me. I was so afraid of stepping on stage and living in the story of, you know, that the quote unquote, this is what quote unquote other people do, as opposed to this is something that I could do. So I got that from my first fitness modeling show and, you know, stepping up on stage as a bodybuilder. And you get different things. You question that limitation. When I did Marathon de Saab, I had a rewired relationship with failure or with pain when I went to the Arctic. So different things happen based on the goals you set for yourself. And you don't have to become a professional fitness model. You don't have to run through the Sahara or through the Arctic. As I said, it's completely relative. It might be asking out that person you fancy. It might be going for that job you want. It might be setting up your own business. It might be trying to get into the best shape of your life so that you can fit into, you know, your wedding dress from 10 years ago. You know, it's so relative. So set that goal and realize that there's always going to be a better version of you on the other side of that, because who you need to become is more important than the actual journey, because you're going to have to ask questions of yourself when you work on these challenges. So I think setting them regularly, getting clear on what it is that you want to do, who you want to become, and then what challenges and what things can you do in your life that help move you forward, is something that's a very serving belief system, and just constantly checking back in with that as you go along.
Oh, definitely. And it's the way that you summed it up through kind of your fitness modeling into the Sahara and then into the Arctic and the things that you took from that. And it's almost like you're creating your own kind of toolkit for your own journey. So you've got those learning points to reference on, whether it be, as you said, it's all relative, whether it's the weight that you've lost or targeting, say, being, you know, getting into a certain dress for your wedding, whatever it may be. But the important part is who you want to become on that journey, but also building that toolkit as you go along, so you don't forget the things that you learned when you went through those different phases in life or different challenges, so that you can go to that toolkit when say, for example, the way that you said you dealt with kind of any worries that you used to have around, say, your daughter or your mum, that the Arctic that taught you and how it kind of helped you deal with mental and physical pain, that's now a toolkit that you can use. And you can look at your tool belt and go, okay, how do I deal with this situation? What situations have I put myself in that are either similar or have given me an item, a tool that can help me deal with that? And I think some people are really quick to brush off perhaps the things that they succeed in and the tools that builds them, because they are focusing on say perhaps the fear of failure. And it's reminding people that you're building a toolkit every day. Every time you step out that door, every time you take on a challenge, that toolkit is one that you need to, you know, you need to have the ability to dip in and use.
I couldn't agree more. I think you've summed it up perfectly there. Like, all you're doing, and I can't speak for everybody else, but I can speak for myself here. Like, all you're effectively doing, or what I'm trying to do, is expand that toolkit as needed, and that you learn when to use the right things, because that rewiring of failure can help you in one area, and, you know, the confidence and being afraid to do something helps you in another. And it's very relative, you know, in terms of what you get. Like, I've worked with people in the past, and Beth, I know you know this as well, that one of the misconceptions people have on, I work with a lot of people for weight loss, is they'll see somebody that will go from, you know, before and after picture or transformation photo and go, wow, you know, that person is carrying themselves differently, they're walking around more confident, and people think it's because they now look a certain way. I'm like, that's not the case. For the majority of people, it's because they've got consistently good at setting small goals that lead up to bigger targets. Like, that's all you do. Like, the biggest goal you set for yourself can be reverse engineered into smaller component parts that you break down and then try and achieve. So if you have somebody that's trying to lose 100 pounds, I'm like, don't focus on losing 100 pounds. I'm like, you focus on losing a pound, and you focus on losing two. When I was running for the Sahara and training for that, I was able to run 2K and then I felt sick. So I didn't go from 2K to a marathon. I went from 2K to 3K. And then the next week I went from 3K to 4K and then 4K to 5K. And then you gradually progress as you go along and you realize that all those goals that you set for yourself, regardless of how big they are in your mind, you can break it down into its smallest component parts. And confidence particularly is just repeatedly keeping promises to yourself. So setting yourself a target, setting yourself a goal, and then doing the things you said you were going to do regardless how you feel. So when you see those photos online, say before and after or transformations when it comes to say weight loss in this example, it's because of the person that individual had to become and the mindset they had to develop to get from that picture A to picture B. It's not because they look a certain way now as to why they're holding themselves higher and they're walking around with more confidence. It's because of who they had to become on the journey. And I think keeping that in mind allows you to take a wider scope and a wider angle of the goals that you're looking to do, and then all you're doing is applying the toolkit like you mentioned. What tool fits this scenario that can help get me forward? How do I build more confidence? How do I rewire failure? How do I overcome the fear? How do I stop disguising the fear as practicality? How do I keep moving forward to go after this thing that I want? And then you're just applying the tool that's the best fit for the job at the time.
I couldn't agree more. And that I've got two more questions that I kind of just want to touch on, Brian, and one of them I ask every guest this towards the end of every episode, and as part of kind of my business and the message that I try and spread to people, I've got a mantra. Now throughout the podcast you've mentioned a couple of quotes and things like that, so I'm fully aware you're probably going to have one or two that might be difficult to pick from, but For my guys, what I say is, if you can control it, you can change it. And if you can change it, you can improve it. And I get them to focus on those three things and really narrowing in on the first line, which we touched on at the start of the podcast. You know, controlling the controllables, as cliche as it may sound, but then adding, okay, so if we can control it, we can change it. If we can change it, we can improve it. If you were to come up with one, say maybe it might be a bit more poignant for you right now, or maybe it was one that was in your mind perhaps when you were going through your transition from being a school teacher into personal training and things like that, what kind of mantra or quote or sentence do you really kind of, when you say it, you think, yeah, that's me, that's what I want to live by, and that could help empower somebody else?
Well, it's a good question that a few things that come to mind there. I think the advice I would live by myself and that I would offer to other people, and I think even though I know this is going to be very difficult to do, but it's something that I will try and instill in my daughter, is just to live life on your terms. Like, decide what you want to do, who you want to be, what you want to get, what you want from it, and then go after it wholeheartedly, and then just getting out of your own way. And I think that, like, I have a very similar mantra to you, Beth, in terms of that. The subtitle of Rewire Your Mindset, the book, was, you know, own it, control it, change it. Like, if you own something and it's in your control, you can change it. That came off the back of somebody that I've had a history of mental health issues with, you know, depression and anxiety, and thankfully that's something that's completely out of my system now, in terms of a lot of the challenges that I suck out and a lot of the self-reflection and journey inside that I had to go with was try and get to the root of that. I'm like, why am I so unfulfilled? Why do I feel unhappy? Why am I anxious? Why am I depressed? And it was just from not listening to that voice. And if you're feeling off course, you can get back on track. Like, there's a reason that people need to differentiate the signal from the noise, like we talked about earlier, that if there's so much noise out there, the bright spot is that there's signal in it. It's just covered by a load of different voices, whether that's people in your ear physically or whether that's virtually, you know, it happens in lots of shapes and forms. But I think living life on your terms, getting clear on what you want and then going after that, it makes it so much easier. Also, I think that, you know, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Get very, very clear on who you want to spend time with physically and virtually. And if you have emotional vampires, those people who suck your energy or suck the life from you, you need to spend less time with those people. You know, my mum used to always tell me that if you lie down with dogs, you'll get fleas. And if you're around those negative people all the time, you're going to become a negative person. If you're five most influential friends who are in your life or family members in your life are thinking the world is against them and that it's, you know, the government's fault and it's Trump's fault and it's fucking this fault or whoever, blaming other people. That's going to be the way you see the world. That's going to be the lens in which you perceive everything around you. And I think you need to control that. And if that's where you're at right now, and I was somebody that was in that situation for parts of my life, and once you remove yourself from it, everything becomes a lot easier. So I know that's a very wide-ranging way to answer the question, but hopefully it ties it all together.
Oh, no, it's brilliant. And to be fair, I thought I was cheeky trying to only get one out of you anyway. That was a hard question to answer because I've only got one because I always know what I'm going to say. If you'd asked me, you know, on your podcast, I'd probably come up with 3 or 4 as well. But no, brilliant. Absolutely, absolutely brilliant. And in kind of the rest of this year, and as you said, you know, taking ownership of your life and moving forward with it, what's on the horizon for you, Brian? What can, you know, those that are going to now kind of perhaps jump on, follow you, listen to your podcast, see all the things that you're up to, what's on the horizon for you next?
To be honest, as long as I'm waking up every day loving what I'm doing, I'm just going to continually do what I'm doing. And that's kind of my North Star at the minute. Like, I love what I do, you know, recording the podcasts, you know, this one here or the one on mine. You know, I run 3 and host 3 different podcasts, writing the books. You know, my next book is out in September, a nutrition book. Doing all the things I do with programs and courses. Like, I'm in a very, very fortunate position, Beth, that I don't have to say yes to things I don't want to do, and I'm in the fortunate position that I've rewired my mindset to not say yes to things that don't move the needle of my life forward in a positive way, whether that's my family, my relationships, my job, my fitness. So as long as life stays that way, I'm going to be happy and continually doing it. And there's nothing major on the horizon. I tend to take whims when I sign up for events and challenges. But when it comes to what I'm doing online with the podcast, with social media, with Instagram, with TikTok, you know, with the blog, with books, with the appearances, all of those things, like, as long as I'm continually love what I'm doing, it's going to be much of the same, if I'm being honest. So for those that are following and who enjoy it, it's not going anywhere. For those who aren't interested in it, I probably wouldn't recommend following me because it's just going to be more of the same. And it's very much a case of, I think that not everybody should follow me. Not everybody should follow everybody else. It's a case of, well, who connects with you? Who resonates with you? Who moves your life forward in a positive way? And then consume the content from those people because it will benefit you the most. Whether that's me, that might be, and that's brilliant. And I'd love to have those people come follow my journey. But if it's not, there's going to be somebody else out there who's the equivalent for you. So find those people and surround yourself with them, either physically or virtually.
Definitely. And for those that have listened and taken one of the many kind of nuggets throughout this podcast, where should they head to find your podcast, Brian, also socials and things like that? I'll link it all in the show notes anyway, but where's the best place you want to send people to?
Awesome. Thank you, Beth. Yeah, so the podcast, the Brian Keane podcast, is probably the best place to check it out. It's where I do a lot of interviews with health and fitness and mindset people. I also host the Online Business Podcast, which is for health, fitness and personal training entrepreneurs looking to kind of expand their business. And then Instagram, Brian_Keane_fitness, is where I spend most of my time online, in terms of social media, and then obviously putting up stupid stuff on TikTok. So I'm on TikTok too, but I'm on everything. If you Google Brian Keane Fitness, it'll bring up all the platforms, but that's where I spend most time and most of the energy and effort creating content for people that can potentially help them with their journey.
Yeah, and I mean I can testify to your content, and especially to your podcast, both of them. Obviously the kind of fitness entrepreneur one suits me, but Brian Keane podcast is an incredible podcast, and people should definitely check it out. So I will be linking it in the show notes. And other than that, Brian, I just need to massively thank you, your wisdom, your energy, and all your kind of musings and nuggets throughout this podcast, because I think there's loads that people can take away and hopefully build on that and let it have a positive effect on their life. So thank you ever so much for your time.
The pleasure is all mine, Beth. Thank you so much for having me on to kick off season 3.
Thank you. Cheers, Brian.
Bye. Woo!